My name is John Sheridan. I'm the Head of Legislation Services at the National Archives. So I have responsibility for, or my team has responsibility for, publishing legislation as it is originally made and also producing revised versions of legislation. I'm an IT person. That kind of new and unusual breed of IT person who puts the emphasis on the I and not the T. So mine is the world of informatics. And I'm going to talk to you about government-linked data and the work that's happening in government around open data, and hopefully give you some points of connection or synergy for some of the challenges that you face with opening up access to archival resources. So you'll hear more of this from Richard Wallace from Talis in a few moments, but if you want to get a kind of really clear notion of what this linked data stuff is about, it's in essence a really simple idea. It's when you have some data, it's linked so you can go away and get some more of it. And what this is saying is that whoever you are, there is more known about the information that you have than the information you have about it. So this is the notion of how can you begin to exploit the information that is known about the information that you have using the web as a platform. And that's at the heart of what the linked data movement is about. So I've borrowed this analogy. This is a picture of a guy called Henry Maudsley. And I borrowed this analogy from a friend of mine, Stefano Bertola, at the European Commission. So Henry Maudsley invented a thing called the screw cutting lathe in 1800. Before Maudsley, we lived in a world where every nut and every bolt were individually made and paired. Every nut, every bolt, individually made and paired. And two things happened, is that the invention of the screw cutting lathe, and then shortly after, the standardisation of the screw sizes suddenly meant that we could move into an industrialised, commoditised world for creating these core components. And we would find it inconceivable now that each nut and each bolt were individually made and paired, like sort of married uniquely for the entirety of their lifetimes. And this is the world that we have been in with data. We have been in a world of individually made and paired nuts and bolts. And where we're trying to get to is a world of nuts and bolts that we can put together without in advance needing to know that we want those two things to match. And if you want a kind of analogy for what this linked data stuff is about and how it helps you, it's somewhere in the kind of equivalent of the screw cutting lathe. It's that kind of thing that's allowing us then to combine and mix data very flexibly, very easily, using the web as a platform. But think screw cutting lathe, think standardisation of screw sizes so that you can start to mix things much more flexibly than it's been possible to do in the past. And thank Maudsley for having that absolutely amazing idea of this idea of interchangeability, which is really at the heart of what this is about. So you may or may not have seen the five stars of publishing data. I will show them to you briefly, but this is the idea, and this is a Tim Berners-Lee concept, that if you have data, just putting your data on the web is a good start, and that you get kind of more stars the further you go. So one star, put your stuff on the web in any format under an open license. Second star, make it available as structured data. Third star, using a standardized format. Fourth star, this is where we start to introduce some linked data ideas, use URIs for things. And this is about giving the things that the data is about names that start HTTP. They're actionable names. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that in a moment. And then start to connect and link your data with other related data. And this is a way of allowing us to think about where we want to be on this scheme with our data, with data publishing. And the five-star scheme, I think, from the perspective of open data, is really important, as you get kind of points all along the way. And for sure, the further that you move through this set of stars, the more work that you're going to have to do, but equally, the more potential benefits that there may be to your organisation. This is all sounding very abstract. So let me talk about some specific projects. The first is the work that the National Archives has been doing as part of the government's transparency agenda for data.gov.uk. The second is very close to home to me, is this notion of a linked data statute book. And the third is a project that's being taken forward by another team here at the National Archives, the Semantic Knowledge Base for our web archive. And the you'll hear a little bit more from Richard about kind of linked data concepts. I wanted to give you three very specific projects, partly so you have some evidence base in terms of considering whether this is a route that you want to pursue, and partly to show some of the flexibility and diversity of this kind of technology and how it's relating to the wider open data movement. So if you're a civil servant, you dutifully read the coalition agreement, and it says, the government believes we need to throw open the doors of public bodies to enable the public and politicians to hold us to account. And then in the coalition agreement, which is the main document that is driving the life of this government, it says, we will ensure that all data published by public bodies is published in an open and standardised format so it can be easily used and with minimal cost. So, my word, data has made it into the coalition agreement. Something extraordinary has happened to mean that politicians have been talking about how we publish data. Something extraordinary has happened for such clear-cut commitments to be in the coalition agreement, the key policy document for the life of this government. And the National Archives has been deeply engaged with trying to figure out what that means in practice. So we've been developing standards for the responsible publishing of data. We've been developing guidance, practices and tools, and we've been working on ways that make it easier for people to consume the data that the government is making available. And here we're looking very much at the transparency data, so things like financial payments, organisational structures. So to give you a little bit of an overview, it means that we've been involved in creating linked data standards for things like organograms, so these sort of hierarchical types of data, for statistics and aggregate statistics, and also for transactions. But along the way, we've developed some open standards that can be applied in many different contexts and to many different types of data. And we've moved forwards by a notch or two the art of data publishing. There's some things that we have taken in terms of our approach to this work. In terms of using standards, obviously it's very important to reuse existing work. We have concentrated on using small and lightweight vocabularies in particular, rather than creating very cumbersome or large vocabularies of our own. And we've used one of the very common patterns in the linked data world, which is to take a kind of lightweight, small vocabulary, and then to specialise it. So one of the things that we've been focused on has been provenance. Where does this data come from, given it's been processed in some way? And we have a very, very simple model for provenance called the Open Provenance Model Vocabulary that just basically has got three concepts. And we're able to create specialisations of this model for different scenarios. So if you're converting some information from a relational database to something else, then you can write a little vocabulary for that. If someone is applying a correction slip to a piece of legislation, you can write a little vocabulary for that. And because all of these small vocabularies for these different types of interaction that people might have with information have the same kind of root underlying model, it all stitches together. In the next few months, we're going to be publishing four legislation documents, a complete machine-readable audit trail for every interaction that has with that piece of information from its creation to its publication. Again, underpinned by this linked data technology. We've made oodles of data. And these are kind of like the pillars. This is a picture of the Library of Congress, and there are the pillars. But think of this as around creating the pillars around which we can start to connect different sources of data across the web. And we've made some really core pillars, and one would be around time. So we've made URIs for British time. Our calendar flipped from being the Julian calendar to Gregorian calendar, I think, in 1752 under the Calendar Act of 1750, and we lost 8 days. If you use the data.gov.uk British calendar addresses, you will find that the 8 missing days are there, and there is a transition from the Julian calendar to Gregorian calendar. Really core assets, though, because it means that we can start to connect information about time periods. And if you've got data that goes back on, say if you're managing the statute book that goes back to Middle Ages and beyond, I think the earliest statute that we publish is 1267, you need some of this stuff to work and be right. But we have some of these core assets now. They weren't there even a year ago. But we also have assets, for example, the Ordnance Survey have made available URIs, these web addresses for locations, in a very granular, very accurate way for topographical areas. So there's this whole landscape that's emerged in the last year or 18 months, creating these pillars around which we can start to connect and link core sources of data in terms of location, in terms of time. There are other pillars too. So we have URIs for every school, for example. We also have URIs, these web addresses for things like stations, for government departments. We have them for pieces of legislation or parts of pieces of legislation as they stood at particular points in time. We have them for notices in the London Gazette. And there's a kind of connection of web addresses around which there is data on the web growing up that the government's been making available that allows other people to more easily take their data and connect it and link it together. We've also been looking at simple tools. So this is an example of using a tool called Google Refine, which is the kind of tool that you can use for creating some of this sort of data. And you can do some kind of simple export type stuff. And we've been looking at lots of strategies or practices for publishing data. And the aim of publishing data is to find mechanisms that both allow people to consume linked data as linked data, but also to publish data in ways that make it very easy for people to use and bind into their applications, to make it very easy to create services enabled by at or on top of data. And the work that the National Archives has done for the Cabinet Office in data.gov.uk is open standards based. The tools and technologies we have used are open source. So this is stuff. It's a platform that others can pick up and take and use and take forward with their own projects. And we're not talking about millions and millions of pounds here to do this kind of stuff. This is technology that you can pick up and start to use to begin with at very, very low cost. So this is an example, a specification called the thing called the Linked Data API that helps make data much easier for people to consume, helps make the process of building applications that bit simpler on top of distributed connected sources of data. And there's an example of what it looks like to people. So, second idea I want to land you with is this notion of, isn't it great, wouldn't it be cool if we had really unambiguous definitions for things? One way of looking at the work that's done by these guys is some of what they do is they make definitions. And some of what these guys do is when people disagree about how certain concepts are being defined, there's a kind of disambiguation mechanism called the legal service. So if you squint a bit, you can kind of see the output of Parliament as being a definition manufacturing system, and you can see the output of the court service being a kind of disambiguation system. So, in a sense, you can imagine that what we're getting from legislative documents, the things that I'm responsible for, is a conceptual framework after the statute book. And so how can we expose this conceptual framework to the web in a way that allows other people to use and consume that information for different applications? How do we make the statute book one of a number of these web-based resources that people can call on for one of many different purposes? And that's exactly what we've been trying to do here at the National Archives with how we have developed the government's legislation service, legislation.gov.uk. And there's lots of things that you need to think about. It turns out legislation's really hard to work with as data, just about as hard as you can imagine. And we have really complicated ideas. So this is A changes B when C says so. So this is the Academies Act 2010, and Section 12 says in subsection 4 that sticking to the Charities Act 1993, anyone who owns an academy becomes a charity, right? So Academies Act changes the Charities Act. And then a bit further down it says sections 15 to 20 come into force the day the Act is passed, and then there's going to be an order that tells you when that change comes into force. And this is the order. And you can see that it says coming into force 29th of July is everything in section 12 except subsection 4, so the thing that changes the Charities Act. And then a bit further down it's section 12 subsection 4 comes into force on the 1st of January 2011. So you have data that looks a bit like this. A changes B when C says so. So Charities Act confers a power to the Secretary of State, who makes an order which commences a subsection of the Academies Act, which puts some text into the Charities Act. So quite sophisticated information that we can capture and serve to the web as linked data that allows other people to exploit that knowledge. And that's exactly what we're doing with legislation.gov.uk, a very different type of application of this sort of technology, bringing different sources of information together across the web of different types. So for data.gov.uk, it's about the transparency agenda, publishing organisation information, publishing finance information, understanding who's spending what, who's making decisions to do what, and how successful they're being. Here, very different use case, very different scenario. Knowledge that's locked up inside the statute book starting to be exposed. Either this kind of explicit knowledge, which is about how bits of the statute book, one is changing another, but also how we start squeezing out of the statute book those definitions. There's a service which has been put together by the Swedish government, which again is using this sort of technology, where you can find the definitions for terms and then see, so for example you're looking for the term contract, how many places is the term contract defined in Swedish legislation? There's 13 examples. How do those definitions vary, and when have they been referenced in case law? Fantastic data to expose, to begin to give us ways to exploit those forms of knowledge that have been very difficult for us to get traction on in the past, and have been very difficult, particularly for search engines, to use and consume. At the point where you move into an information space which is non-trivial, you kind of run out of you run into the limitations of what traditional search technology gives us. And this is allowing us to start to really make use of some of these more sophisticated forms of knowledge across the web. It's no surprise, therefore, that Google bought one of the kind of poster boys for this form of kind of codified knowledge, a thing called Freebase, which is a big database of named entities, which have been created by the community, by people across the web. Exactly, to try and improve their search, because they want all these identifiers to all these different named entities. They want that kind of codified knowledge. And we, delivering solutions to the public in terms of how we, for example, allow people to access legislation or how we allow people to access archival resources, we have some of these same challenges too, and we can exploit the same technology too. So, but there's lots to think about, and particularly for something... I mean, legislation is at the upper end of hard for doing some of this stuff with, for reasons that I shan't detain you with, but you probably get the idea from looking at that kind of stuff, of possible futures and unknown futures, and this is going to be prospective and this may happen. The last project I wanted to talk to you about is the semantic knowledge base to the Web Archive. And you may know that the National Archives has been gathering UK government websites, and we've created this phenomenal collection. I think it's about 10 terabytes and grows by a terabyte a quarter of enormously diverse information resources. So we've got official documents, mostly in PDF, we've got web pages, we've got data sets, Excel spreadsheets, CSV files, then each web page's got all of the component parts, so photographs and so on and so on. And traditional search has not worked for us as an approach or a technology to allow people to begin to explore that, partly because we've got lots of duplication of the same page crawled multiple times. So we were able to procure... and again, this is, we're not talking about huge sums of money. We were able to procure a semantic knowledge base. And this is building some tools with, again, some forms of codified knowledge, actually using the vocabularies that we created for DataGov UK about the structure of government, and putting that into a tool that can then mine from the Web Archive facts, like this mentions the Prime Minister, this is a consultation document, the consultation document is related to this green paper or this white paper, which is related to this piece of legislation, and they're all referenced from the explanatory notes that go with the Act. You can see a kind of policy flow. These are the politicians that were involved with making those decisions. So we can build quite sophisticated information about a very complicated and sophisticated information asset. I mean, this is still work in progress. The current project comes to a close at the end of this month. But to give you a size of scale, although this wasn't something that was fantastically expensive to procure, you're looking at something that will store 10 billion facts. So a very, very sophisticated kind of asset. To summarise, and say Richard will pick up on some of these themes, I've talked a little bit about what the core concept is, the screw-cutting lathe, and how we can start to bring different sources of information together and use the web to do that. And that's important because whatever the information is that we have, there's more information and knowledge about it out there than the information that we have, and how do we start to exploit that? And the first step is to expose what we have to start to enable those network effects to grow and develop. I've given three example projects. The work that's been happening in DataGov UK, very focused on transparency, that's put in place a bundle of standards and practices and tools and guidance that makes this technology practical and implementable with reasonable pace, and at relatively little cost. I've talked about Legislation.gov UK, very close to my heart, very different kind of scenario, complicated, sophisticated information resource where we can milk out useful information and expose that to the web. And the semantic knowledge base to the Web Archive, again, a very, very different type of resource where, again, we can codify and capture the intelligence, the knowledge that we have, use standards that are being created elsewhere, and apply them to deliver a different kind of, in this case, search experience, a different kind of user interface. Underlying this all is an approach that's very rooted in standards, that's very rooted in not just thinking about your information in a silo, but thinking about your information as part of how it fits with a wider web of data and the value that we get as we connect and link our data together.